You've been through pre-Cana, maybe you've even said, I do, and now what? Welcome to After Cana, a podcast for young couples looking to make it until death do they part. In each episode, we'll share sage wisdom and practical advice from couples who've been married for 20 plus years. My name is Gabby Quinlan, and I'm so excited to be back today with another compilation episode. This topic that we're going to be covering today is something that I've been thinking a lot about, and it's something that the whole Fairest Love team is going to be focusing on during the month of March, and that topic is forgiveness. So within the context of marriage, forgiveness is pretty integral. I think most people would agree on that, but it wasn't until I kind of deep dived into the conversations we've had in our previous episodes and all of the different guests that we've had on After Cana that I realized how layered forgiveness is. And I just wanted to give a little bit of background before sharing the wisdom from our different couples. So to start off, I wanted to read a little excerpt from an article on forgiveness that I found online on berkeley.edu. And here it goes. Psychologists generally define forgiveness as a conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance toward a person or group who has harmed you, regardless of whether they actually deserve your forgiveness. I love this definition because I think it harkens back to the idea that in a Catholic marriage, we are called to truly unconditional love. From the start of the marriage until death. Unconditional love means loving your spouse regardless of if you feel like it, regardless of if they're acting really mean or hurtful, regardless of where you are in life, what your financial situation is, what your family life looks like, regardless of everything. Unconditional love is choosing your spouse every day, choosing to prioritize them and love them no matter what. And so this topic of forgiveness, I think, and this definition of forgiveness are just really, really important to remember as well, that along with unconditional love comes the need for sometimes unconditional forgiveness. You know, your spouse might not deserve it, but you are called, as you know, Christian spouses, to try to forgive them and to try to move on in your heart. I think the reason why forgiveness is so important is because forgiveness is what combats resentment. So, and along with forgiveness, the ability to apologize combats resentment. But I think resentment can so easily build in a marriage, particularly when your lives are so, like I said before, so layered that there is just a ton of opportunity for people to be hurt and for expectations to not be met. When you are trying to maintain a romantic relationship while also taking care of all your adult responsibilities, your work, your finances, your children, your families, your individual families, it can be really, really easy for different tensions to build up and for bitterness to kind of come out of nowhere. And so that's why we really just want to stress the importance of forgiving wholly in the little things and not allowing that resentment to build if possible, so that you can avoid those really, really intense betrayals and hurts that can happen when years of resentment are built upon. So some of the topics of hurt that we're going to be addressing in this episode include a lack of communication, broken trust, a lack of perspective. And then on the flip side of that, we're going to be featuring some couples' advice on prioritizing your spouse, how to get help if you're struggling, and then also how to approach conflict resolution. So without further ado, we will jump right in. I hope you enjoy this, and I hope this sparks some really great conversation between you and your significant other.
I think our first big one was probably when we were engaged, probably still on campus, right?
Yeah.
So the background here is, I was, unknown to Amanda, I had scheduled a lunch with one of my friends who happened to be a female. Mm-hmm. But I paid a visit to Amanda before that time. I just popped by her dorm, said hello and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I got to run. She said, why you got to go? I was like, well, I have something to do, but I didn't really clue her into what was going on because I didn't want to like cause any suspicions or anything. But I did have lunch with a friend of mine, in the RAT at UD in the lower eating area. While we're eating there, lo and behold, here comes Amanda, who I just said, I don't have time for you. And here I'm sitting with another girl, and the look on her face, I was like, okay, I'm dead.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. And so just turned around, walked out. And I'm like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble here. And so later on, when we connected, it was pretty big because she felt rejected. I'll let you tell her side of it, but she kind of felt like I rejected her, and I didn't know who this other person was, and can I trust him now, and sort of thing, right? Like, that's kind of like how it played out.
Yeah, and I think this really ties into just underlying issues that individual people have but aren't verbalized. Mm. And so I had never talked to Alex about things that I mean, the phrase now is triggering, but, you know, things that would have triggered me back then into being really upset. So in his mind, it was a platonic relationship. He was just in a public space, eating some food. It was lunchtime. It all seemed very reasonable to him, and he had no malintentions. So, you know, there's where he's coming from. But then I'm coming from needing stability, loyalty, knowing that I can count on people because of my childhood issues. But I never really talked about any of that because, you know, while we were dating, it was kind of like the fairy tale land for me. I had made a new life for myself at UD. I had separated myself from a lot of the sadness of my childhood, and I didn't share that with him. So I'm overly upset, and it's difficult for him to comprehend why, because in his mind, it's just a friend, we're just having some lunch, you know, that kind of thing. And we talked about this last night, and we really, I feel like, came to a revelation. It's not admitting guilt, it's just acknowledging how the other person is feeling. So mm-hmm. for him, what he didn't do, which would have been helpful for me at the time to comfort me and to really help me get past it, would have been to say, I can see how that might have been very upsetting for you, and I'm sorry that I put you in that situation. How can we avoid that in the future? And then I would say, just make sure I'm invited to the table, and I can choose whether to be there or not, but that way I don't feel excluded. I don't feel lied to, because mm-hmm. you know, he didn't tell me that that's what he was going to do. And I think that that was great progress in compassion for the other person. You know, I could acknowledge, I know you didn't have any bad intentions. I know you're a good and faithful person. Let me feel included. Let me know that I'm loved and that I'm wanted. And then I can make the decision, do I want to sit and have lunch with you or let y'all have your private conversation? Mm-hmm. But that way there's that transparency and that inclusion. So I feel like we make progress in that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the thing that we learned over the years in our marriage is gotta make sure you maintain the trust, gotta make sure you're transparent about everything. Even if there's like an inkling of like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's like, well, I probably should cover that. You know, because that goes a long way of, and it's real easy to to have that trust broken if you're not careful about everything that's going on. So that was an early learning, an early, you know, little fight we had, spat.
I can see a common thread in a lot of arguments, right? Because it usually stems from some kind of need for reassurance. I love you. You're important to me. I'd really like to go to join my friends at the bar or go to this football game or do this thing. But if I'm secure from the beginning, then I'm a good-hearted person. I would say, absolutely go. I want you to have a good time. So that's something I think couples could learn is, you know, make sure the other spouse is comfortable first. And usually they will be more amiable when it comes to, oh, this is a trip or an outing or something like that. And then they don't feel left out or unwanted.
And I, my buddies would call for a golf outing and I would drop everything and go to the golf outing, even including Mindy. I was willing to have fun at the expense of our joy. It wasn't until I really truly had a mission of being a man after God's own heart. And the only way that happened is when I returned to the sacrament of reconciliation. And then I committed myself to, and this was random because they had just, this was 30 some years ago, perpetual adoration, 24/7. We have a big parish and we're going to 24/7 around the clock. We're going to offer perpetual adoration. But if you decide to sign up for a sacrificial time. When he said that, that blazed me right between the eyes. And my sacrificial time was 2:00 on Sunday afternoon, because that was the start of NFL football. And while that may sound a little funny, that was my false god.
Wow.
And so it wasn't. So the sacrament of reconciliation and a prayer life is what helped Mindy to come under that mission. It was the first thing that popped into my mind. And it's just a clarification that I think the word love. You know, we say, I love pizza. I love my car. I love my new house. I love my decor. But John Paul II, again, Pope, now St. John Paul II, in his Love and Responsibility, talks about the opposite of love is to use. I love pizza. I love my car. I love my job. I love my neighborhood. Well, you can't love those things because they're objects. They don't love you back. But the opposite of love is to use. We're supposed to use things and love people. In our culture, we love our things, and it seems like we use people to get them.
Mm.
And so I think it's a really good distinction for engaged and married couples to really enter into, am I doing this for my gain and for my pleasure and for my, yes, marriage, if we're doing it God's way, we'll both experience blessing and joy. When I was early in our marriage and it was me, myself, and I, and I couldn't say no to my buddies, I was willing to have fun at the expense of mine and Mindy's joy. I couldn't say no to my friends. I couldn't say no to these other things. Was I really loving Mindy, or was I using her? And I had to admit humbly and sadly, and even 32 years later, it's hard to say, but was I loving her? Or she looked good. She had a good job. She drove a nice car. She, you know, it was more utilitarian than it was love. And if we objectify the other person in our using of them, little by little, we're going to find ourselves in a place that is not very good. And our wine, our love, our mercy, our grace, the wedding feast of Cana, our wine is going to run dry. Conversely, if we look to give ourselves away as gift and make a supreme gift of ourselves and be of service to our spouse, and we begin to both drink in that grace, that mercy, that love, that so help me God mentality, help me be a gift of self. Now we have something.
What would you say is like one of the most difficult things you guys have had to work through in your marriage so far?
Well, I think your migraines.
Yeah, so I have really chronic debilitating migraines, and I've had them essentially my whole life since I was 14. So, and you know, I've been to myriad of physicians and specialists and, or whatever, every kind of doctor. And, when I started having kids, something got worse. I mean, even through college, like one of the reasons I didn't go to college till I was 24 is because I could be down for 5 days at a time with a migraine. And so you're missing class. And, you know, there were a lot of factors. So I had amazing professors who were super supportive. And when I missed class, they didn't dock me and let me make up the work and all that. Anyway, so it wasn't a new problem, but it did seem to be exacerbated by pregnancy and postpartum in particular. And so after my first baby, you know, it wasn't great, but we were kind of, you know, we're muddling through. I guess after Al's, it wasn't all that bad. It was like your typical 2 or 3 days a week. After our second, so 16 months later, we had another baby. And when he was about 4 months old, I ended up with this completely intractable migraine that just laid me out. And I was in bed for 15 months. So, you know, we had a brand new baby. I mean, a 4 month old baby and a 20 month old baby. And Adam was working in like mortgages. And
by that time, I was teaching.
Oh, that's true. By that time. So, yeah, he was teaching. Anyway, that was tremendously difficult because I was in and out of the hospital. I'd be in the hospital for, I guess, the longest stretch was like 11 days. My mother lived about an hour and a half away, 2 hours away. Eventually, she just took the boys to live with her because I went eventually. I didn't go at first. So it was horrible. It was so hard. And, you know, I had to like wean immediately, like, because I got hospitalized and they were like, you can't breastfeed on all this medication. So that was immediate. And then, you know, first we just thought it'll just be while I'm in the hospital. But then when I got out of the hospital, they hadn't been able to break the migraine. And so I was essentially just half comatose on medication to keep me from writhing in pain. It was
keep her out of the emergency
room. And to keep me out of the emergency room because I just would just go back. And so, poor Adam, it was so hard.
It was really hard.
So then we didn't have the boys. Then eventually I just couldn't handle being away from the boys. So then I moved down with my mom and Adam would come on the weekends and that was worse. I was like, I can't.
That's terrible. Man.
And that actually was when I realized, I mean, we've always had this kind of motto that our marriage comes before our kids. And we knew we wanted to prioritize this relationship. And that of course that outpouring is what supports your family. And not to mean that we would ever ignore the children, but you know, the first priority is our marriage. And that experience really did for me solidify, like I miss my kids with an ache I could not describe, but not seeing my husband every day was just so non-negotiable. I was like, this is not working, you know? So the Lord did a lot in those circumstances. And I ended up being able to move back and we had somebody who came every day and took care of them at the house for free so that I could, you know, be near them.
That's great.
But then Adam, I mean, was bearing all the weight of like, is Annie ever going to get out of bed? And, you know, we've got these two little boys. He's making no money. We've got medical bills crippling us. And
as a teacher,
yeah,
you know,
he was making.
Yeah.
He was a teacher. Yeah. 18 years ago. So imagine. Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
So I will say in that season, I realized that I had a bunch of like, I had not dealt with my own abandonment issues entirely. And so my father left when I was, again, when I was about 10, died about 4 years later. And I was raised by this amazing single mother. And I think I had just, I realized when I got really sick that I was just waiting for Adam to leave. Like I just kept thinking, mm-hmm. well, this is it. You know, why on earth would he stay for this? And we were going to have this big family. And now I don't know if I'm ever getting out of bed and nobody can fix it. And people think I'm crazy. And, you know, it's just like all the factors. And then you could tell your part of like,
oh, well,
I never said that to him. I never said I thought he was going to leave, but I vividly remember lying in bed thinking, well, this is it. My mom's going to have to move in, you know, because he's going to leave and I can't blame him. Which is so stupid because knowing Adam, he never would. Like,
yeah.
And I remember the being like, "Who? Look at who you're married to. Like, you did not marry your father." Yeah. But I also just felt, it just felt so impossible that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I mean, on my end, it was, you know, I remember it started on a Super Bowl Sunday.
It was Super Bowl Sunday.
We were watching the Super Bowl at her brother's house and yeah, I could tell she was getting migraine. I was like, oh, well,
let's go.
So we got the two babies or the two kids and went home. And usually her migraines, bad one lasts 3 days, maybe four days. And then she would like get up and kind of be in the post-migraine fog, you know, for a day. But I just kept waiting for that to happen. And then it was a week. And then we went to the hospital. And then it was 2 weeks and 3 weeks.
We went to the hospital again.
And it just... you know, so then it's like, oh my gosh, do we, I guess, are there specialists in this? And so we get on the waiting list, specialist 6 months, you know, and it's just, it, you know, there was no solution. And it was just so disheartening because I couldn't do anything other than take care of the boys, you know. And yeah, I mean, it was just, they would go either with my mother-in-law or some friends of ours for the day. I would go teach, come home, or pick them up, come home, dinner, bath, and bed, and like every day. Saturdays, Sundays.
Wow. Yeah, he was just single batting it big time.
And there was the hardest part was actually just the like kind of infinite horizon of the whole thing. Like it, and she was just laying in bed, and there was no end. Like it was, it just felt like Groundhog Day in a sense or something.
Yeah.
Just like it was really hard. And I mean, I was praying. Novenas, you know, going to mass. I mean, just everything I could possibly do. And
oh yeah, I had like anointing of the sick a half a dozen times. You know,
just, oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah, it's water basically. Yeah. You know, it was like the whole community. I mean, everybody was.
I mean, it's relics, you know,
yeah.
All around the world. It's really beautiful. But it was just really
endless.
It was endless and it was really, you know, it was very difficult. Like she said, a lot of people started to think that maybe she was faking her migraines because there was no visible sign. You know, it's like she had this. Anyhow, there's just all kinds of a lot of our friends left.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really terrible. And anyhow, so I told this to Annie a few years ago, but I just remember, you know, one day I was doing the dishes.
Again.
You know, I mean, this is like. You know,
6-7 months in probably.
Or more. It's more like 11 or 12 months in, you know? And I was just so frustrated. It's like I was exhausted and I finally got the boys to bed and like Annie was already in bed, obviously. And I like watching the kitchen. It was just
a mess.
You know, I was like, oh, our stupid little tiny kitchen in our tiny house. And I can't get any, you know, so I just had this whole moment, you know, this whole
resentment,
moment of anger, you know, and so I'm doing the dishes and we don't even have real dishwasher and like fine. And, mm-hmm. And so I did, I like kind of pled to the Lord. I was just like, you know, what am I supposed to do? Like, this is just
too much,
you know, it's like, there's nothing, you know, I was just so angry. And then clear as day, it's almost like he was standing right beside me. He goes, well, you can leave. And, you know, I was just like, frozen.
Whoa.
Right? I know, it still gives me a chill every time.
I just got a chill. Oh my gosh. That's wild. Like,
Well, hold on.
Yeah, no, like that, I'm not going to leave. Like I was kind of hoping that he would take care of everything, right? And but, so when I got that message, like I was just like, oh my gosh,
no,
I'm never gonna leave. Like, that's not at all what was on my mind. And so I just said, I'm gonna finish the dishes and I'll just, you know, trust that this is all gonna work out somehow, you know. And anyhow, but that was extremely like sobering. Yeah. And so yeah, but after that, I don't know, I guess it was 4 or 5 months, she started to come out of it.
Yeah.
We did lose a pregnancy, I think.
We lost a baby. Yeah, well, that was the other thing, is we wanted a large family. And, you know, when the boys came 16 months apart, that was a little like, oh, okay, well, that's pretty fast, but it was fine. And then I got so sick. So then there was, you know, that whole, like a whole year where I just thought, I don't know if I'm ever going to have another baby. And that made me really sad. And, of course we were being super careful to not get pregnant. We did have sex that year. People probably think they must not have, but I still was like, the least I can do is make sure this man has sex sometimes. It's a poor man. but we were not expecting to, and I did. And something about that pregnancy triggered a relief. And so with the hormones that came with that baby, I started coming out of it. And then we thought, oh, praise God, it's the baby. And then I lost the baby. Which isn't a surprise, because I was on so many medications and narcotics and all kinds of things, and weaning off of those, trying to get, you know, back to normal. And I think my system was just so stressed. So we lost that baby. But then I didn't end up back in bed. Like, then I ended up back to kind of the older way, which was, you know, migraine attacks regularly, but not intractably like that. And you know, it really shifted our perspective, I think, on family too, because, you know, we knew we wanted a large family, but then when all of a sudden you feel like, oh my goodness, what if we just have 3 kids? We were always very open after that, of just like, the Lord's going to do what he's going to do. And we did have 6 kids in 8 years, even with that year in the hospital.
Look at you guys. You're amazing.
So it all, you know, but it's funny, like when you were saying, you know, we're not ready, we don't have the money. That's one thing I was always so grateful for with Adam, is that money was never a reason in his mind for us to abstain or to avoid having a baby. And it wasn't just because he didn't want to abstain. Like, it was genuinely just like, well, no, you know, like his dad has a saying, I guess, is it a Spanish or Russian, or every baby comes with a loaf of bread under their arm.
I like love a little that.
Russian thing or something.
Spanish proper.
Spanish. But just the idea, and that was so true, that the Lord just always continued to provide. And there wasn't an abundance necessarily, but there was always enough. And no one was hungry and no one was unclothed. And, you know, the Lord just always found a way to meet the needs. And then when we would feel like, oh my goodness, how are we going to do another baby? You know, it would come together and we would find the strength and the peace. And it wasn't, you know,
a lot of side jobs and things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's Adam working, and he always worked so hard so I could stay home, because between my health, and once you have more than like 3 kids, it doesn't make, you can't pay for help anyway.
It doesn't
make
any sense, you know. Not, it doesn't mess it up.
Right. So he did work a lot of side jobs and night jobs and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was definitely long answer to the hardest time.
Oh my gosh, but really helpful though, because I mean, I had no idea. And also, I think a lot of people deal with issues that you can't necessarily see, and it's really taxing and difficult. And I think that that's so beautiful that the Lord literally spoke to you and brought you through that time.
There's something very like, you attack problems differently Yes. When you have that mentality.
Well, that, exactly. And let me just say this, because I've worked in my first legal case, I was an attorney. So was one that had to do with annulment of a marriage. Funny enough, because I never thought that I would deal with that. And I can tell this to you couples out there that can be listening to this. If you ever have that reasoning in your mind that you can, you know, well, after 6 months or 2 years, even in the deepest parts of your heart, if you're thinking you can, you know, opt out of this thing, then you're lacking a fundamental element into marriage. Mm-hmm. And no matter how much you celebrate a marriage, you're not getting married, you know. Wow. You're just making a part, you're just getting into a partnership. And right. A partnership is great. It's got great advantages, but it's not a marriage. And when it comes to a relationship between a man and a woman, you know, you don't want to do partnerships. You want to go to the real things. You can do that in business, you know, but not when you are vesting your person, your very self. That's why marriage is unsolvable, not because any religious authority says so. It's because it belongs to the nature of it.
Right. It's
what's at stake is your very self. So be aware of these things, because if you have that somehow harbored in your heart, you just have to, you know, examine yourself and come to terms with yourself and straighten things up, because yeah. you're starting with a false step there if you do that. And it can go very subtly into the deepest corners of our heart. So be aware of that. You don't want to come into a relationship to say, oh, well, I can always opt out if the worst comes to worse. No, that's not it.
I will say at this moment that it's also very smart and intelligent. If you have problems, you need to look for help. And mm-hmm. and don't wait. Don't wait until the situation is very, very complicated, because it's difficult. So we have been working in family life coaching for many years, and we have mediation practice, family mediation practice for years, and we heard so many things, and we decided not continue with mediation. At least I decided, and he decided later, because it's so late in the process of marriage when you get to mediation. It's so sad. That my advice is always look for help. We don't have this idea that we can look for help before we have a problem. It's like when we look for help in marriage, it's usually when the things are very bad. Mm-hmm. So if I need to give some advice, is don't be afraid to look for help. And nowadays we have this world of coaching that is different from therapy. Coaching is an accompaniment through the process. It's like you will never decide to sign in for a tournament without a coach, or you were never decided to hike the Himalaya without a Sherpa. And then you look for the help. So you can do that in marriage too. Look for the help. Don't consider that you have all the answers. Ask for questions, look for accompaniment, share with other couples, and not everything needs to be therapy. And it's the therapy, the coach will refer you to the therapy. But there are some things that are kind of before marriage, that are all, you know, those issues from your life that need to be healed. That is one situation. But also, how do we get to some point that is more coaching? So look for the help. Nowadays, we have all this. So don't try to survive alone when you are the biggest adventurer in life, that is the one that decided to have a family. So look for all the tools.
I love my wife. I have to quote her on. I don't know where she got this or where she made it up. I just love it when we disagree on things, her one-liner to me just kind of says, it's all okay. She says, you know, right now, I don't like you very much, but I love you.
Oh.
Right? And so that's kind of the cue to, okay, you know, whatever, you know, we'll work this through or get through it. But I just love that line. Right now, I don't like you, but I love you. And that means so, so much.
That was so good. I am really happy that we went through that together. I especially loved the last bit about even when you don't like your spouse, you love them. I'll be using that with my husband for sure. I hope that was helpful for you. And if it was, and if you're looking for more resources like this, don't hesitate to head to ferrisloveshrine.org. We put out lots of blog posts and resources on topics similar to this. You are not alone if you're struggling with this. We are here for you. And if you did enjoy listening, feel free to share this episode with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review, or again, visit us at ferrisloveshrine.org.